Excellent Movie Adventures.
Welcome to another episode of Excellent Movie Adventures. This week we have something a little bit different. Of course, me, Pick, who's been to every single episode ever, I'm still here. And this week, sitting across from me, we have our lovely editor. She's also my wife, Lizzie.
Sup.
That's your thing you're going to say, just sup?
Cool.
Anyway, we had some crazy scheduling issues and stuff going on this week, and we still needed to put out an episode, so Lizzie picked a movie, and we're going to review it for you guys here in a minute, right?
Yes. Yes, I picked a movie. Should I tell you what one it is?
No.
Okay.
Normally we do this thing where we talk about what we watched this week, but I know you didn't watch anything except for that movie, probably.
I watched that other movie kind of with you.
Oh, The Prospector?
Yeah. The one that you pretended you knew about.
Yeah. Gabe will think this is funny. He's a friend of ours who listens to the podcast. So, I don't know. I watch a ton of movies. That's why I do this movie podcast. And they randomly just text me to ask me if I knew some Western themed movie that takes place in space that's a Netflix original, just to see if I knew what it was. And I just took my phone out and looked it up because I didn't know. Like, there's a lot of Westerns on Netflix, and I don't know which ones are necessarily originals or whatnot. So I just searched Space Western on Netflix, and it came right up. So then I was like, is it this? Which is a movie called The Prospector, with Pedro Pascal in it, and that was it. And I just played it off like I totally knew what it was. So I watched it this week, and it was pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it. And it's rated R, which I don't really watch, and I liked it, like, the whole time. I can't think of a place, part of the movie that I didn't really like or couldn't watch.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of weird.
Yeah, the craziest thing that happens is probably when that guy's arm gets cut off.
Yeah.
But
it's not terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't terrible.
Might be kind of gross for some people.
I didn't think it was that bad. Because it's obviously like a Netflix budgeted film, so it doesn't have like all the money in the world to be made. So it's like not the best looking arm that gets cut off.
Yeah.
Like, I guess, like, there's some burnt skin and blood and guts and stuff, but
it was a pool of blood.
Yeah, it's nothing crazy. Like, I've definitely seen worse in movies that aren't rated R, so.
Yeah, and they cut away, like, when she actually took his arm off.
Mm-hmm.
And then other brutal,
laying on the ground.
There was a brutal death in it, and they also cut away on some of it. But I thought it was good, and I thought it didn't seem like a rated R show.
Yeah, I don't think it should have been rated R. It felt more like a PG-13 movie to me. And there wasn't any, like, cussing or anything that I noticed.
Yeah, I didn't hear any swearing.
So.
What else did we watch?
I'm trying to think if I watched anything else.
We watched some South Park.
Yeah. I watched some South Park. I tried to watch this movie. I forget what it's called, but it's got Kristen Stewart in it, and it's basically like a remake of the movie Abyss. I couldn't finish it.
Is that like an underwater thing?
Yeah.
Like underwater alien thing?
Yeah, that's basically what it is. I didn't think it was the greatest. I didn't finish it.
What was it called?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know. Underwater or deep water or something like that.
I heard that one was good. It wasn't good?
I didn't think it was so great.
And it's not because you don't like that girl?
No, I guess giving it a chance.
Good job.
Yeah. I did watch this movie called The Good Liar, which stars Helen Mirren and Ian McKellen. Yeah. And it was pretty good. It's just this movie about this guy. Well, Ian McKellen, he's like a con artist, and he's old, obviously. He's been doing it like his whole life, essentially, just swindling people out of money. And he's got like this group of people he does it with and like partners or whatever. and they come up with schemes to like steal people's life savings away from them. And he like romances this widow, and they become friends, and he like fakes an injury and stuff like that. And he ends up like moving in and learning all about like her bank accounts and stuff like that. And then he gets her to invest in this like firm, and turns out, she was actually playing him the whole time. So,
so he gets schemed and all of his monies go away.
Yeah.
I guess that's, you got to kind of expect that sort of thing if you're trying to do that to other people, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the ending was a little crazier. Like, it turns out that they actually knew each other as kids in World War II, and she remembers this.
Basically, and she hated him?
Well, no, she, like, had a crush on him, but he's, like, responsible for her family's downfall because her dad was, like, not a Nazi. And he, like, ratted her family out to the Germans.
Oh, dang. That's not good.
Yeah. For being, like, a sympathizer or something with the West. And, I don't know. She just had a terrible life because of it.
That sucks. Yeah. Guess she didn't love him after that.
Yeah. Anyway, it was okay. It wasn't terrible. I actually started watching it, like, well over a month ago. And then I just noticed that it was still in my continue watching on HBO, so I finished watching it.
It took you a few months to watch a movie?
Yeah. I mean, I remembered what had happened. It wasn't like, it's not like a super complex plot or anything.
That's funny.
So, it wasn't too crazy.
As for the South Park ones, we are watching the earlier episodes, which I think are less bad. Hmm. Don't you think?
I don't know. I think earlier on, they couldn't get away with some of the stuff that they obviously can get away with now, because they weren't allotted the same amount of freedom, and they weren't as popular of a show. So.
Well, I like the more censored version.
They feel a little more reined in than some of the newer ones. I don't know. I like the show as a whole, but some of the early episodes are good. Some of them are kind of boring.
Yeah, I didn't like that cannibal one. I didn't like that one. But I really liked those Canadian people one, mm-hmm. where it was them the whole time. That was super funny. And they were like farting everywhere.
Yeah. We're finding out what's going on with Terrence and Philip.
Yeah. And they go to court.
Yeah, it's a funny show. All right, well, do you want to tell us what movie we watched this week?
Yes. Willie the Sparrow.
No, we didn't.
That was my second choice. We watched Secret Life of Walter Mitty, the newer one from 2013. I can't remember the year that the old one came out, but it has Dan and Kay in it. And I have seen the old one, but I don't really remember it very much. Hmm. But I usually like the original movie more than remakes, usually. But I like the remake more in this one. I really like it. Hmm. I saw the old one, but like I said, I can't really remember it. So I think I should remember it if it's way good. Right?
That's one of my rules. If it was really that good, you'd remember it better.
Yeah. And I do have that one. Maybe we should watch it.
Yeah, I'd be up for checking it out sometime. Sweet. Anyway, this movie, PG-13, and like you said, it came out in 2013, it looks like. At least that's when it opened at the box office. It was filmed on a budget of $90 million, and overall, it doubled its budget worldwide, $188 million, which is pretty good.
Yeah, nice.
Made some decent money. Written by Stephen Conrad, if I remember right, and then directed by and starring Ben Stiller.
I love that dude. He's so funny.
Yeah, he's a really talented director. He makes some good stuff. The rest of the cast, Kristen Wiig plays the main love interest of the movie, and Catherine Hahn plays his sister. Aside from that, you have Adam Scott as kind of the jerk who comes to town to like fire everyone at the magazine that he works for.
Yeah, he's the worst.
And Sean Penn, who plays the famous photographer. And Patton Oswalt plays the guy who works for the online dating service.
eHarmony. Oh, that's his name.
Yeah.
What's the name of the guy that he works with? Walter Mitty, his friend. The guy with the fern.
I don't know. Let me see.
I like that guy.
I don't know. Do you remember the name of the character?
No. Maybe Hernando or something like that. Anyways, he's cool. He has like a sad little face. He's cute.
Hernando. Adrian Martinez. If that is indeed him.
And his name's Hernando?
No, his name's Adrian Martinez. The character's name is Hernando.
Yeah. I like that guy. He's cool.
So anyway, the movie starts out and Ben Stiller just plays this guy. He's a negative asset manager, which sounds super boring and is one of the jokes later towards the beginning of the film when Adam Scott's character gets introduced. But essentially what he does is people send in their photographs to Life magazine, and he's in charge of processing the negatives and blowing them up so that they can be made into pictures in the magazine or the cover of the magazine, which is the case in this movie. Sean Penn's character is this famous photographer. I forget the name of his character.
Sean Connolly, I think. I think that's his name. I keep remembering things.
Anyway, he and Ben Stiller have never actually met in the movie, but they've been working together for years and have spoken on the phone, I guess, multiple times. And they respect each other's work. And Sean Penn only trusts Ben Stiller to handle his photographs. And he's kind of like the, I don't know, hot stuff around campus. Like, everybody cares. When his film roll gets mailed in, everybody's like wanting to know what's on it and which photo is going to be the cover and all this kind of stuff. And essentially he opens the reel and one of them, picture number 25, is missing. And so he's trying to track down this photo.
Yeah. And 25 is supposed to be for the very last
cover of the magazine.
Of Life magazine.
Yeah. Because Adam Scott's character, he basically is hired by companies when they're bought out to go in and just get rid of anybody who's not necessary, clean house, essentially.
Essential workers.
Yeah, essential workers only. So they're turning Life magazine into Life Online, I guess. They're going to be a website now, so they don't need all these people.
Who print everything off and, like, organize the magazine. And
right, they're just not going to need those people. So
workers.
Right, so he shows up, and right away, he's a jerk. I mean, Ben Stiller's character, he, like, does these, like, daydreaming things where he'll be, like, in the middle of a conversation with someone and just, like, break out into a daydream, which is some of the best moments of the film are the daydreams. Like, there's one where he's trying to catch his train to work in the morning, the first daydream of the film. And he's like walking towards the doors to get on the train. And he can hear like dogs barking in the background. And he, all of a sudden, you're seeing him like leap off the train platform and like smash through a window. And then he comes out the door at the bottom of the building. He's holding this dog and he's like, "Everybody get down, she's going to blow." And then the building explodes.
He saves a little dog.
And he saves a three-legged dog. Yeah. And builds a prosthetic for it while he's walking down the stairs. And then he immediately, like, snaps back into reality and none of that's real.
And he misses his train.
Yep. So now he has to figure out a different way to get to work, take a cab or whatever. And he happens to be late the day they found out they've been purchased. And Adam Scott's coming in to fire everybody, essentially. Catherine Hahn plays his sister named Odessa, and she's like got this tryout to be Rizzo in a cheap community version of
Greece.
Greece.
At a church, yeah.
And they're trying to move their mom at the same time into an old folks home. And she has this big piano that their dad bought her before he died, which causes some issues because it won't fit into the apartment, which you'd think they would have, like, done that research beforehand instead of, like, hiring a forklift and all these people to, like, winch this piano up into the sky and then it doesn't fit through the window.
Yeah.
But,
anyways, then they have to, like, think about, getting her a different place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're just trying to kind of figure out the mom situation. She has to move.
Right. So in the meantime, she's going to stay with Ben Stiller. And, she says something about, you know, hopefully I won't cramp your style or whatever, or your scene. And he says, like, what scene? And then he's, like, never home. Like, he doesn't even, we don't even see the mom again until, like, the end of the movie, essentially. Yeah. Anyway, he can't find this photograph anywhere. He works with Kristen Wiig, and she's this girl that he likes. So he overhears that she's on this dating website, eHarmony. So he joins eHarmony because he hasn't actually talked to her. He's just overheard a conversation that she was having. Anyway, he's trying to wink at her, but it, like, won't process the wink for some reason. So he calls the helpline for eHarmony and talks to Todd, who he just wants to... Every time I hear the name Todd, I just think of The Last Man on Earth. Some freaking fat guy named Todd.
I love it when he does that, like a beatbox, break dance.
Break dances when he's angry. Anyway, Todd in this movie, played by Oswald Patton, he is the guy on the phone who's helping him. And he's just being like, hey, I think my account might be bugged or broken or whatever. And I was wondering if you could help me. I'm trying to wink at this girl on this site or whatever. And he's like, well, first things first, we have to complete your profile. And he's like, I see you didn't fill out anything for been there, done that or whatever. And he's like, yeah, I skipped it. And he's like, dude, don't skip stuff. That's what you're paying us for, is our algorithm. We need all this stuff filled out. So he's like asking him all these questions. And he's like, oh, I haven't been anywhere. I haven't done anything. I'm super boring. And then he zones out. Talking to him on the train platform. That's what he's doing. He's talking to Todd when he has that daydream about the building.
So Todd finds out that he, like, dozes off and has these daydreams. When he is having these daydreams, I imagine he's just, like, staring there. Like, he just stops moving and he just is staring.
Yeah. So anyway, he goes to work and his sister's there waiting for him because she wants him to go supervise the moving of the piano while she goes to the tryout for Rizzo, Wu-Tang Clan. He can't because he just found out they're being absorbed into this online site and he has important work to do. So he makes her go do it, but she gives him his birthday gift from the mom, which is some kind of cake.
Clementine.
Yeah, Clementine cake. With little orange slices on it.
Yeah.
And so he takes it up into the elevator and they're riding up there. And that's when we actually meet Adam Scott for the first time. And he, you know, is like, what do, cake man? And he's like, oh, I'm not a cake man. I'm a something, something. And he's like having a hard time, like, getting it out.
About what he does.
Yeah. And then he has a little daydream about. Yeah. So Adam Scott makes fun of him for not being able to, like, talk right. And then he has this little daydream where he's like, hey, Dumbledore looked good in a beard. You don't. And, like, the people in the elevator and him are all just laughing in his face. Yeah. But then it snaps back to reality and he's just standing there and the guy's like, hello.
What do you do?
Yeah.
And then, he's such a jerk.
Yeah, he's like, super... I'm a negative asset manager. And he's like, worth the wait.
Yeah. He's super sarcastic and just a brat the whole time. But it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Worth the wait.
Yeah. There's a lot of fake beards in this movie.
Really?
I don't know if you noticed. Like, that beard Adam Scott has, that's not his real beard. There's no way that's real. And the beard Ben Stiller has towards the end of the film, that's also not a real beard.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't notice that. Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Why?
It looks super fake. Like, I don't know. There's not something like about, like, beard real man, beard hair. Huh?
I said not like the beard man, though. His is, like, super fake looking.
What beard man?
The beard man. The jerk guy.
Oh, Adam Scott? Yeah, his is fake. You can tell it's, like, glued on or whatever. yeah. Ben Stiller's is, too, but it's just, like, a much thinner, patchier one.
Oh, like, okay.
Yeah, it's weird. They put it on with makeup. It's not real.
Weird.
Yeah.
I didn't notice.
Anyway, so then he wanders over to, like, get some coffee, and he's imagining a conversation where he's, like,
an awesome, like, mountain climber dude.
Yeah, like an ice mountain climber guy, and he's talking to Kristen Wiig's character.
Cheryl?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And Adam Scott, again, has, like, focused on him, and he's, like, he's just not even paying attention. Like, what is he doing? He's just staring up into space.
And they, like, joke about throwing stuff to him.
Yeah, he's, like,
throwing stuff at him.
Yeah, so they throw a paperclip at him, and he, you know, it startles him, and he turns around, and he's just super blown it. Like, every time his new boss is around, he's, like, just drifted off into space somewhere. And anyway, so he goes down into their dark room and with his coworker guy, and finds out that the new Sean Penn negatives are in, and he's got to get negative 25 up to the board so they can decide whether it's going to be the cover or not, but he can't find it. But there is a sweet gift that he left for him, which is a wallet.
That Sean left him.
Yeah, that Sean left for him, so pretty nice little gift. So he lies and says that the photo is in processing, and that they'll have it for him soon. And then he has his coworker pull three other photos for him that are dated for around the same time that one was supposed to be taken, and try to figure out where he was based off of these photos. So, anyway, he's able to figure out that, first off, he finally has his excuse to talk to Cheryl.
Yeah.
Because he asks her, because she works in payroll or something, if they have a mailing address for Sean Penn. And she says, well, I'll check with somebody and I'll let you know. So she looks into it. In the meantime, his coworker blows up the photo of the water. Because there's three photos. One is of somebody's thumb. One is of water. And the other one is like a curved thing.
Yeah, some weird shape.
Yeah.
Thing.
We don't know what it is. And anyway, he blows up the picture of the water, and you can see the outline, like the reflection of a boat and the name of a boat. And then, so he's looking into that, and she comes and tells him that he has two mailing addresses currently. One is in Iceland, and the other one, well, one of them is in Jersey or whatever, which isn't that far away. And then the other one is in
Iceland. Yeah. And so then she gets back to him and was like, hey, it's in Iceland. He's in Iceland. And so right then, Walter was like, oh, right. Okay. Like, he doesn't go and do things, and he's not adventurous. And he's, I think, is like afraid to live his life a little bit. And so as soon as he found out that he was in Iceland, he's like, oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to go and talk to him in Iceland, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, his boss, he has to go to, like, a big meeting, like a staff meeting, where Adam Scott and his cronies are telling everybody, like, hey, just so you know, this is the last issue of Life magazine, and you're probably going to end up being fired. But, you know, let's make it the best issue we can while you still have the opportunity.
Yeah, and he says, and we feel sad about this. As you can tell, you can see, we feel sad about that.
Yeah, being super sarcastic about it. And then he's like, on the upside, we got a picture from Sean Penn. And so let me read this thing he sent, because he sent a telegram to tell them about the photo or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, where's negative 25 or whatever? And they're like, that's with the negative asset manager. And he's looking around, and somebody points to Ben Stiller, and he's like, oh, it's you. You're the negative asset manager. that boring thing that you said earlier. So he's like, where is it? Where's the photo? And he's like, it's still in processing. You know, these things take time or whatever. So he was like, all right, well, you know, I want to see that soon or whatever. Get it to me as soon as it's ready. So he understands that it's important that he track down this photo. So he decides he's going to go to Iceland, I guess.
What motivates him to go? Because at first he wasn't like going to go. Oh, maybe that he...
I think it's...
Oh, he talks to Cheryl and she's like, why don't you just go and follow what your wallet says that Sean sent, which is the life motto, which I wrote it down if you want to. Yeah, I will read it. So the life motto is to see the world, things dangerous to come to see behind walls, draw closer, to find each other, and to feel. That is the purpose of life. So he talks to Cheryl, and she convinces him to go to Iceland and go and live his life and, like, go and do this adventurous thing and find Sean, find the picture, because that's his job, and the picture is missing. So,
well, I don't remember the exact thing. While he's waiting to hear back from her about, like, the Iceland thing, he meets her son skateboarding.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Which is one of my favorite scenes. I really like that scene. You see him, like, doing all these tricks with his son, and with her son, and in the background, and she's on the phone. And so in the background, you can see Walter showing Richard, the son, these tricks and stuff. And every time Cheryl turns around to look at them, he is just standing there like he's done with his tricks. So it's, I feel like it's kind of like a scene where you're like, is this a daydream or is this real? I think it's real.
Yeah, I think it's real too, because Richard, the son, Rich, he seems impressed with like the kickflip and tricks that he does. So that, the skateboard tricks, that is Rodney Mullen.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
That's your favorite guy.
Yep. My favorite skater in the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater games. So that's why I grabbed my phone. I was going to tell you while we were watching it. Because I was like, I saw, so the tricks that he does, like, first he does, like, a kickflip, but then he does, like, some freestyle land trick, and it looked, like, immediately, just having seen it, I was like, I bet you that's Rodney Mullen. And so I looked it up, and it was him.
That's awesome.
So, which is also why he's out of focus every time he's doing a trick, is because they don't well, want you to be able to see.
It's not him.
It's not him, yeah. That being said, there is a scene later in the movie where he's longboarding down like this long windy hill. That is Ben Stiller.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he did that. Or at least he says that he did it.
That's so. Another one of my favorite scenes.
Anyway, his sister meets up with him again because there's an issue with the piano, and she gives him a Stretch Armstrong doll for a birthday gift because that was his favorite toy when they were kids. And when he gets back to work, there's another really funny daydream scene where, like, he's holding the doll in his hand and he runs into Adam Scott in the elevator and he's, like, trying to talk to him about the photo.
He's like, I can't talk to you when you're holding this. Put this away.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, he's, I can't take you seriously with your little blonde friend here. And so, you know, he's, like, kind of goofing on him and he starts to daydream about him and Adam Scott getting into this, like, crazy, like, Matrix-like chase scene involving the Stretch Armstrong, where they're, like, bouncing around off cars and, like, city they're buildings like and stuff.
Down the street on ski
the whole time, streets. Each one of them is holding on to the end of a Stretch Armstrong, and, like, there's these little snippets of the doll, and it's, like, making different faces and stuff.
Because it's getting all stretched and out and uncomfortable.
Anyway, it's pretty funny. But at the end of that, that's when he tells him, like, the next time I see you, I want to see that picture. So I think that's what finally motivates him to go, is that he has to find it because he's also trying to keep his job.
Yeah.
So he finally goes to Iceland. He just flies there. And he goes to the one, I guess, business that's there. Like, there's this bar.
Yeah.
And, like, nothing else around. But, yeah, he goes there, rents a car when he first gets there, and they only have two cars.
Did he rent the blue one or the red one?
I think he rents the blue one. I don't even remember. But yeah, he's like, can I rent a car? And they're like, yeah, we have two. Okay, well, what are they? A red one and a blue one. And then it shows them they're the exact same car. They're just red and blue. So he rents one of them, and then he goes to this bar. Mm-hmm. And he's asking about the name of the ship, if anybody knows what it is. And the lady behind the bar knows the ship, and, you know, they have some radio parts for them, and they're supposed to deliver them later or whatever.
Yeah. And there's this guy in the background singing karaoke, and he's obviously, like, super drunk. So he's asking this lady about it, and then finds out, oh, wait, and then he comes over, the drunk guy comes over to him and was like, hey, sing this song. What song? I can't remember what song they're singing. Anyways, they get into this fight, mm-hmm. and, like, the drunk guy pokes him in the head, like, 20 times, mm-hmm. and they fight, and it gets kind of out of control, and then, like, right last second before I feel like he was going to get knocked out by this dude, he, like, stops, and he's like, hey, I know your thumb, or whatever, and he notices that guy's thumb was one of the pitchers.
Mm-hmm. And so he gets talking to the guy, and the guy is the helicopter pilot who is supposed to deliver the radio parts to the ship because they can't actually dock there for some reason. So he's like, I'll give you a ride, but he doesn't want to ride with him because he's obviously drunk, and this guy's going to fly a helicopter.
The pilot's like, I'm super worried about the storm. I'm just going to finish my beers before I go.
Well... it's like this giant beer. It's like in a boot-shaped glass.
Yeah. It's huge.
Mm-hmm. So he finishes drinking that, and he's getting out there to leave, and Ben Stiller has another daydream of Cheryl. So Kristen Wiig's character playing guitar, and she's playing
Space Odyssey.
Space Odyssey, yeah. And anyway... that somehow gives him the courage to run out there and jump onto this helicopter as it's, like, taking off. And that's, in my opinion, probably one of the most important parts of the film because it's the transition from him daydreaming everything mm-hmm. to, like, actually doing stuff. And also, we don't know for sure what's real and what's fake yeah. anymore. So, because he hasn't done anything like that this whole movie. You know, so why should we believe he's going to run and jump onto this helicopter? But he does it all yeah. of a sudden.
And it's after the helicopter has gone off, so he, like, has to jump and grab onto it and climb in, and then mm-hmm. his face is just like, holy crap, I just jumped into a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like you said, that's, like, the major turning point of where he does his first, like, super adventurous thing in his life, you know?
Mm-hmm. So he's on this helicopter, and they're flying out there, and he's talking to the pilot, and, you know, things seem to be going okay, aside from him being super nervous in this...
drunk pilot helicopter?
Yeah. And he's like, there's the boat right there. We gotta... and he's like, where are we supposed to land? And he's like, oh, we don't land. I can't land. They don't have a pad for me to land on. So basically, I was just going to drop the radio parts into their boat. And they're little, Ben Stiller is looking out one side of the helicopter where the main boat is. And it's pretty far away. He doesn't know that there's, like, a raft floating basically right below the helicopter on the other side of the helicopter. And the so he's like, here, take these radio out. Parts and just jump into the boat.
And he's like, jump in that boat? Yeah, jump in that boat. And jump, like, in that boat? Really?
Right. He's like, don't you think it's a little far away? And he's like, no, it's way closer than you think. So they're talking about two different boats. And so he just leaps out of the helicopter.
Goes into the water.
And goes straight into the water.
And loses all the radio parts.
Yeah. You just see the box, like, just sinking down in the water. Because he jumped out the wrong side of the helicopter. And the pilot tries to stop him, but he's too late.
Yeah. And then he's just yelling, wrong boat, wrong boat.
Yeah.
And I feel like I would totally do that. I would be like, if someone said, jump out the boat, I would always just probably do the wrong boat somehow. I feel like that would happen to me.
Anyway, so they come to get him, and they're trying to get close to him, and all of a sudden you see like this fin swim by real quick, and one of the guys on the boat is like, we've been boating through this area that's the school of porpoise around there. It's just a friendly porpoise. Don't worry about it. And he's like, oh, it's a porpoise, whatever that is.
And they're friendly. They'll protect you from the sharks.
Yeah. And it turns out it's not a porpoise. It is a shark. And the shark like lunges at him and he hits it with his briefcase. And then the guy on the microphone is like, oh, that's not a porpoise. That's a shark.
That's a shark.
Yeah. So he's having to fight this shark in the water. Again, none of this seems real. Like, it seems fake as it's happening. And he doesn't seem like as panicked as you think he would be based off of like how nerve-wracked he was jumping into the helicopter, you know? But finally, after like three or four lunges by this shark, they pull him into the boat at the last possible second as the shark's lunging at him again.
Yeah, and he has to like, the guy that rescued him, he has to like touch his face and like slap his face and... Real face. Like, yeah. Just had to make sure that he wasn't daydreaming.
Right, again. He's checking with himself to make sure he's not daydreaming.
What's happening?
Mm-hmm. So anyway, he's on the boat now with these guys, and he's like, hey, can we radio to shore for whatever? Because I need to try to track down this guy. And
we don't have a radio.
Yeah, we don't have a radio. You dropped it into the ocean.
And there's that funny guy over there that's, like, learning English from, like, Facebook and... Or he's just like learning English slangs or whatever.
Well, I think that they just have learned English slang from television, but they're not learning English. Like, some of them know how to speak it. But Sean Penn was on the boat and he, you know, helped the one guy, give him some pointers on how to take pictures for his Instagram and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
was helping him out.
Facebook friends.
Yeah. The people on the boat are pretty funny. They keep saying stuff like, I don't even remember, like, calling him dog and referencing to Sesame Street. And
yeah, see you in the Sesame Street or whatever.
Yeah, I'll see you on the Sesame Street, stuff like that. But anyway, they basically, hanging out with them, he finds out that they're headed to Iceland because...
Or is it Greenland?
No, it's Iceland.
Oh, I thought he went
to Greenland.
There.
Now they're going to Iceland. Anyway, now they're going to Iceland because they have to go there to get new radio parts because he dropped theirs into the ocean or whatever, so they have to go back. So they end up going back, and he gets out and has to run and get a bicycle and ride a bike to try to get to this town where they think Sean Penn might be staying at a hotel. And so he gets on this bike and takes off down the road. And again, he starts to daydream, though I don't remember what he's daydreaming about.
Does he daydream then?
Yeah.
Oh, and then he crashes.
Yeah. He wrecks the bike.
I don't remember that daydream.
Yeah, he's daydreaming about something. Anyway, he crashes the bike, ruins it, so then he has to run the rest of the way. So he runs to this town, and everybody's like getting out of there, but he sees these three kids standing around with the skateboard, and he trades his Stretch Armstrong for the skateboard. With these kids who, like, don't speak English and he doesn't speak, you know, whatever language that they speak in Greenland, apparently. And anyway, so he gets the skateboard and then he goes into the hotel, but there's nobody around. He can't find anyone. And he goes out the back door through the kitchen. And there's this guy who's, like, frantically loading up a car and trying to tell him.
That kid, I think it's kind of cool after he trades that Armstrong guy for the skateboard. In the background, you can hear, like, the parents yelling to the kids. And then you can – it cuts scene into Walter going into the building. And you can hear, like, that car peel out.
Because everybody's trying to get out of there. But
Walter Mitty isn't really, like, noticing how people are, like, kind of panicking.
Yeah, everybody's, like, trying to get out of this area. Anyway, so he talks to this guy, and he's wondering where... He shows him a photograph of Sean Penn and asks him basically where he's at. And he's like, oh, yeah, he went that way for whatever, but the hotel is closed. You can't stay here or whatever. And he's trying to... Like, he's, like, jumping back and forth between, like, English and whatever language he actually speaks. Maybe it's still Icelandic. I don't know. But anyway, he takes off on this longboard and straps some rocks to his hand, and he longboards down this long, windy road to get to where he thinks Sean Penn is. And he gets there, and he's, like, looking around, and again, there's no one around anywhere. And then all of a sudden, this plane flies overhead, and there's a guy standing on the wings of the plane. He's, like, strapped up there with a camera, and then he looks over right as this volcano just erupts out of nowhere. And the guy that he was talking to at the kitchen, who was loading up the car, pulls up and is, like, trying to get him to get out of there. He's like, dude, we have to go, like, you know, you can't be down here or whatever. But they, like, the guy keeps, like, switching between English and whatever other language. So he's, like, not getting his point across. And then finally he sees, you know, this volcano erupt or whatever. And so he's like, all right, we got to get out of here. So they take off. And there's kind of this, like, false build in the movie there where you think that something crazy is going to happen because, like, all the ash and debris from the volcano is, like, falling all around them, and it engulfs the car and the screen goes black. But then it just jump. It's basically just a jump cut, and you just see him, like, pulling off the side of the road into a
and just covered in ash
parking lot, and the car is just covered in ash, but they're, like, totally fine.
Yeah.
So, anyway, he goes to this Papa John's pizza restaurant in Greenland and is doing his checkbook and figuring out what he needs to do to get back home because he lost Sean Penn again, can't figure out where he is. So he goes back home.
He had to go back home because that his friend was going to get fired if Beard Guy didn't see Walter.
Right.
Like the next day.
So he has to go home to save his friend from being fired. So he goes back there and he goes essentially straight to work. Like he lands in the morning and just goes straight there because he doesn't change or anything. And they see him on the road and they're like, whoa, you look rugged, I guess. So he gets there and the bearded guy, Adam Scott, is outside the building and sees him. So he's like, hey.
You, I see you.
Yeah, I see you. And then he tries to hide behind this big poster that they're moving or whatever.
It's like super, super awkward. Like, he tries to hide and he totally just fails at it. He's just like standing there like, oh, man.
Yeah.
He sees me.
So anyway, he doesn't have the photo that he's supposed to have. So he gets fired. So now he's fired. And he tells the guy, like, you know, I've never misplaced a photo before. It wasn't in the role where it was supposed to be. I don't have it. And he's like, well, too bad. You know, put it on a plaque, hang it on the wall at your next job. You're done here. Sends him on his way. So he takes off. So he goes home, meets up with his mom, and is, you know, just kind of talking about, you know, the piano and, you know, they're going through, like, her boxes and packing up her stuff, and his old travel journal is in there and this backpack that he had, and they're talking about, you know, the dad and who had died when he was a kid and stuff like that. And he's holding up this photo of the curved thing that we didn't know what it was. And all of a sudden he realizes it's
the piano.
It's his mom's piano. It's like a close up of the left side of the piano where it kind of comes down from the top of the piano into where, like, the key bed would be. And there's, like, a chip in it, and that's how he knows that it's the same thing. It's, like, identical. So he's like, Mom, did somebody take a picture of your piano recently? And she's like, yeah, I did, with Sean's camera, like, 2 weeks ago or whatever. He was here to visit. I told you all about it. And now we find out that he was daydreaming when he was telling her about it, or she was telling him about it, and that's why we don't know. So anyway, he gets upset that he couldn't find the photo, and he throws the wallet that was gifted to him away. And anyway, he then finds out exactly where Sean was going from
his mom
talked to him and knows. So he goes on this trek again to try to track down this photo, even though he doesn't work for Life magazine anymore. So it really doesn't matter, but I guess it's just for his own personal gain at this point.
Well, his mom says about how Sean was talking about Walter and saying that he was the only one that he trusted with his work, mm-hmm. and that he always got the job done and how Sean wanted it. So I think that's why he goes there, because he's like, yeah, I should finish the job, you know? And mm-hmm. I should do this for Sean, because it's the picture that he wanted. So I think that's why he went back. So he goes to ungoverned, Afghanistan?
Mm.
Yeah. So he goes there. He hires some two little guides, strong little men, he called them.
Yeah, and they help him trek through Yemen, through Afghanistan, and he takes some of his mom's cake to bribe the warlords into letting him trek through there.
It's super terrifying because they pick it up with their like
little bayonet on the gun.
Yeah, and eat it. Go ahead.
Anyway, so he gets through there and he's hiking through these mountains, and he finally gets to a point where the guides won't go with him any further. Like they won't. There's this funny scene where they're like just pointing because they don't speak the same language. You know, they're just pointing around.
And it goes on forever.
Yeah. It seems to go on for a good while. And
they're all wearing swishy coats. So it's like.
Yeah. So they split up and he goes off on his own and seems to be that way for at least a day or two. He's trekking across these mountains and stuff alone. Finally, he's going across this mountainside and his phone rings. And he picks it up, and that's kind of a common thing is it seems like every time something kind of happens to him or after each major event, his phone will ring and it's Todd from eHarmony to update his profile for him and like get more info because he keeps hanging up on him.
And, I think it's funny that Todd just always is like, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
Like, hey, who's this? Like, he never says, hey, this is Todd from eHarmony. He's just like, hey, man, what's up?
Yeah, the first time he learns that he's just a boring guy, right? And then the second time, he's like, oh, yeah, man, I should tell you, yesterday I jumped out of a helicopter and fought a shark. And he's like, what, for real? And
he's like, hey, man, for people who daydream, you know, you should. And he's like, no, this really happened. Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm just going to put Adrenaline Junkie on your profile. And then, anyway, he tells him where he's been. And he's talking to him for a minute. And then he's like, hey, man, I'm going to have to let you go. I'm, like, up in the mountains. There's not a lot of air up here. I have to make oxygen decisions. And as he's doing that, you just hear this voice be like, hey, man. Will you step out of my shot or something like that? And it's finally Sean Penn. He's finally tracked him down to try to see if he has another copy of this photo, number 25. So he hangs up on Todd again, and he's like, hey, it's me. It's Walter Mitty. Yeah. And he's like, oh, hey, man, come, you know, while you catch your breath, come have a seat. So he's sitting there for a minute, and they kind of have this moment where he sees this snow leopard that he's been tracking down for the last few days. Way off in the distance, but he doesn't take the photo. And Walter asks him why, and he's like, well, sometimes when I'm, you know, I've found, like, my subject or whatever, the moment's just too beautiful to be thinking about the camera. Like, I just want to be in the moment and observe it.
I always thought that he, because he said that when he's in a moment that he really likes, that he doesn't take a picture. And I thought he was talking about how he was talking to Walter Mitty for some reason. I thought that it felt special to Sean because they were talking and visiting. But maybe I'm just wrong.
Yeah, I think it has to do with
I'm right.
No, you're wrong.
I'm right.
Anyway, the snow leopard walks out of frame. You know, the moment's now over or whatever. And he's like, hey, man, what happened to that photo? And he's like, I sent it to you. And he's like, well, no, it wasn't in your roll. And he's like, yeah, I know. I put it in the wallet.
I said, look inside.
Yeah, and he's like, I thought you meant inside the wrapping paper. And he's like, no, I thought it'd be cute. I put it in, like, the little photo thing in there. And he's like, you thought it'd be cute. Dude, that's really dumb. Why did you do that? That was so stupid. Like, you got me fired, essentially. Like, I couldn't find the photo or whatever. And he's like, well, it's no big deal. I mean, you're sitting on it now, right? And he's like, no, man, I threw it away.
Well, that hurts my feelings.
Yeah. So he's like, that hurts my feelings. And he's like, I wasn't meaning to hurt your feelings. I just, you know, I've been through some stuff. And, you know, I was fired and whatever. I threw it away. And so, anyway, there's these kids playing soccer on, like, a dirt patch below them.
I don't think those are kids.
Well, whatever. There's people playing soccer. So he's like, hey, we should go play with them. So they go down there and they play soccer.
And he refuses to tell Walter what the picture was.
Yeah. Walter asks him what it was and he won't tell him.
He just said it was a snow leopard.
So anyway, he flies back to the U.S. and his mom picks him up or whatever. And she's like, oh, here, I got this for you. And it's his wallet. And he's like, where'd you get this? And she's like, oh, I saw that it fell into the trash. I'm always saving your knickknacks for you. And so he opens it up. And sure enough, the photo's in there, but he doesn't open it. So we don't see what it is. And he goes back to Life magazine and delivers it to them and basically tells Adam Scott, like, hey, you know, I understand that you've probably got a stressful job and, you know, you have deadlines to meet and stuff like that, but you don't have to be a dick about stuff all the time. Here's your stupid photo. Mm-hmm. I'm out of here.
That's the only time Beard Man, like, is quiet and doesn't say something rude. Mm-hmm. Walter shut him up.
So he leaves, and he meets up with Cheryl because he gets an email from her. Her son likes the skateboard that he bought him.
Oh, we forgot that part. He dropped the skateboard off to the
Rich. Yeah, the longboard that he traded Stretch Armstrong for. He gives it to Rich. Anyway, the kid really likes it, so they send him a video about it. So he meets up with Cheryl again and basically asks her out on a date for the first time. And they're walking down the street, and she's like, oh, hey, the final issue came out today. We should see what it is. And they walk over, and on the cover of Life magazine is Walter Mitty sitting on the by the pond outside the building where he always has his lunch, and he's looking over negatives of photos to, you know, he's just working, doing his thing.
Yeah. He's, like, super surprised, but he just, like, doesn't say anything.
Mm-hmm. He's trying to play it off super cool.
Yes.
And then she's like, you don't want to buy one of those? And he's like, oh, I'll probably just come back later and buy one. I don't want to seem too needy or whatever. Yeah.
I didn't want to be uncool or something like that.
Right, basically. So anyway, that's it. That's the summary of The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. But the movie is really good. I really like the overall feel of the film.
Yeah, it's super artistic. And, like, when he finally, like, decides to go to, is that Iceland or Greenland first?
He goes to Iceland or Greenland first.
When he's, like, running out of the building, you can see all the Life posters on the wall. And then the last one is him in, like, an astronaut suit. And it said, like, making of a brave man. And then as he's running to the airport or whatever, it shows, like, the motto in the background and the Life motto. It's really cool. Also, I think there's probably a lot of sponsors in this movie, like Papa John's, eHarmony, and Life magazine. I feel like those must be sponsors because they're, like, kind of in your face in this movie, don't you think?
Yeah, maybe.
So there's this daydream that Walter has that's pretty funny. He has this daydream about talking to Cheryl. In real life, she's on their phone with her ex-husband or whatever, and she's like, I better get this because maybe he fell down a well or something. So then his daydream is she gets off the phone and says, he did fall down the well, but I don't care. And then it goes through this, like, love story, and he tells her that he has Benjamin Button syndrome, and he's getting all old. And then
I remember that.
It goes back to at the end of this, like, love story that he's created. They're sitting on a porch, and he's, like, this tiny little shriveled up man baby on a porch. Oh, man, it's super funny. She's just, like, talking to him, like, I know, baby. You know, not that baby because you're a weird man baby, but it's super funny. And then she's all snuggling him and just, like, just nestle here and die. It's super funny. I really like the longboard scene where he's just going down that hill. Like, that's all he's doing with the rocks on his hand. And he's kind of going down for a long time. But I really like that scene because I feel like it's just like he's gaining his confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that part of the movie. Yeah, overall, they do a great job of in the background, on the walls and stuff, or on, like, signage that's around, like, street signs or the Life magazine, like, there's, like, giant framed Life covers and stuff. They have, like, different words and phrases that go along with what's happening in the story at the time. So those are kind of cool little Easter eggs to keep an eye out for because it kind of tells you, like, foreshadowing of what's happening, essentially. But I don't know. It's, like, a detail that's easily missed, but
I don't remember that. What are the things?
I don't remember what they all say, but it's like in the background, it'll like say just different stuff. But then like when it cuts back to it, that's not what it says. So it's like different when he's like walking past it. But then when the camera angle changes, it shows like what it actually is.
Ah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So do you think that it is an artistic thing or if it's like in his head, subconscious?
No, I don't think he notices it at all. I think it's just a storytelling device.
Yeah. I like it. It's cool.
Will Ferrell was considered for the role of Walter Mitty.
I wonder if it was like, when was Stranger Than Fiction? What year did that come out?
I don't know. I think this movie is great, and Ben Stiller was awesome, but I think Will Ferrell would have been a good fit for this film.
Yeah, well, when you first said that, I was like, that's weird, but then I thought of Stranger Than Fiction, and he was really good in that movie. Because I forget that he does some serious
His dramas are excellent.
Yeah, but I like Ben Stiller. He's, like, super awkward, and I really like watching him act in this movie because, like, even when he's just opening his email that the Cheryl's boy sent to him, he's watching a video. He's, like, in a coffee shop or something, and so he's just watching this short clip, and he stays in character really well. Like, he's looking around kind of, like, nervously to make sure, like, he's not disturbing people. I just noticed, like, little tiny things. He seems really realistic and stays in character really well.
Just... So in the last Life cover to be packed after Walter gets fired, features George Harrison of the Beatles. In the very next scene, a chalk mural can be seen that says, "Here Comes the Sun," which is a song that was written by Harrison and first released in 1969.
This movie is based on a short story called The Secret Life of Walter Mitty by James Thurber. It was written in 1939. It is a short story. It's on YouTube and it's like 14 minutes long. Huh. I've never read it though.
Well, maybe you should if it's that short.
Fine, I'll do it. I saw something else. I didn't look at it, but I saw something. I didn't want to look at it because I thought maybe it would make me sad. The Horrible Hidden Truth Behind Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Should I see what it is?
If you want to. What is it, a video or an article or what?
It's an article.
Oh, you don't have time to read that.
But maybe it's cool.
Right, but you should have read it before we were sitting here recording. So then you could just tell us about it. Now we have to sit here while you read it.
Fine. Someone look at it and read it. Sheesh. Well, apparently it's horrible. That's all.
Well, the movie is really good.
I wonder if it's saying like that he's actually crazy the whole time or something. But I say no. because his daydreams stop. Although some people might say that maybe his whole life is a daydream and it's all one big giant daydream.
Maybe.
But I say no. I say no about that.
Maybe the bartender did knock him out and the whole rest of the film is a daydream.
Whoa. But I'll say no. I'll say, I don't like that.
Really, he's lying in a hospital bed somewhere.
I said no.
Okay.
It was real life after the daydream. And the helicopter thingy, real life. And then after that also.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, definitely check out The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. It's an excellent movie.
Also watch the original one and tell us what you think about it.
Yeah. And if you have any suggestions or, you know, movies that you want us to review in the future, you can go ahead and send us an email at excellentmovieadventures@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram at excellentmovieadventures and Twitter at excellentmoviepod. And
me at lizzieemail.com.
That's not your email.
I really don't want emails. I just wanted to be cool.
Oh. Congratulations, you're cool. Anyway, feel free to reach out to us there. Give us a follow. Also, rate our podcast wherever it is that you're listening to it. Spotify, Apple, wherever. And write a review if you can. We definitely appreciate it. So, anyway, we'll see you guys next week.
See ya.
Excellent!